Leaders are all around us, at all times and in every area of our lives. They motivate, they risk the first step. But what motivates a leader? In our Central Texas Leadership Series, KWBU has invited local leaders to talk with people they know who guide and inspire to find out what makes them tick. In this episode, Lyndon Olson. In addition to a notable career in the insurance industry, he has served in the Texas House of Representatives, chaired the State Board of Insurance, and he served as U.S. Ambassador to Sweden from 1998 to 2001. Hosting the conversation is Will May, Dean of Baylor University's School of Music. This is the first of two parts of an extended conversation between Dean May and Ambassador Olson.
This is Will May, and I'd like to welcome you to the KWBU's production of Central Texas Leadership Series. My guest today is Lyndon Olson, a well-known figure in the Waco community and a longtime friend of mine, and it's a delight to welcome you, Lyndon, today to talk about leadership.
Thank you, Will.
And it's certainly been a part of your life throughout your career to hold a host of different kinds of leadership positions. So what our intent today is to talk about the characteristics of leadership, what you've learned over the years in various leadership roles, things that you might have to say to those people out there who aspire to travel in some of the same ways that you have in your life. So with that, let's see if we can define leadership. Now, in preparation for this, and Lynn has already told me he doesn't have an acceptable definition of leadership right off the bat, but let me read one, and I think this is one that most people would agree to, and that's leadership is a process whereby an individual influences a group of individuals to achieve a common goal. I think that's a pretty good definition of leadership, and so why don't we start there? Is that in the general sense of the leadership that you've provided in various roles over the years in the insurance industry, in Wall Street, in government service, in the legislature, as an ambassador, now as a businessman, have you found yourself always in a position of needing to influence a group of individuals to achieve a common goal?
I have. And I've thought a lot over the years, 30, 40 years, I guess, what leadership is. I've read Stephen Covey's books. I've read a lot of the leadership authors in the country. I'm not sure there is a definition of leadership. I predicate everything on my own life experience and what I know about myself and what I know about what I want a leader to be and the kind of person that I choose to follow. I think leadership can be a very, very complicated process. I don't think that the qualities that I look for in a leader, say in public life, necessarily are always the same qualities I look for a leader in private life. I think that often we get inspirational personalities confused with leadership. Yeah. And the characteristic of leadership. Yeah. Example I used earlier with you was Rosa Parks, who for the young people that may not know who Rosa Parks was the lady who essentially triggered the civil rights movement in the South. Rosa Parks, to me, was an inspiration. Was Rosa Parks a leader? I think you could say she led, lit the fuse that unleashed a lot of the civil rights movement. There are some leaders that I think you have to ask yourself, what are the characteristics of good leaders? And that's probably highly subjective. I tend to look at to people who are basically good people. I want my leader to be a good person. And you can say, well, what is a good person? A person who cares about others, a person who at their core has values that the values that I'd choose would be values within the Judeo-Christian tradition, although I think I think there are people who have wonderful humanistic values that care about their fellow man, care about the widow and the orphan, care about those things, and people who have no means to support themselves in terms of, emotional weakness, mental weakness, whatever the weakness may be. But I want someone who's strong, who's thoughtful, who understands the value of collegiality, but also understands that sometimes people just have to get out there on a limb by themselves and are willing to step out, people who have personal discipline. And I start with leadership. I start with those characteristics in a person that I think is a leader. I've known a lot of sorry people, frankly, that turned out to be great leaders. So
indeed, if we use that definition I started with, there's been some people who've done some pretty horrible things over the years that influenced in people to meet some sort of common goal, and when the common goal was not great, there was a problem with that. Let's go back a ways, but let me preface this by say, you're dealing here with a hopeless academic. You know that. You've known me long enough. So if I don't use the word theory every once in a while, I think I'm somehow abusing my station here. But there's three notions of how leaders are developed that are kind of intriguing to think about. One is that leaders are somehow born, or they arrive on this earth with traits that leaders have. They are products of their own genetics and their own experience, and they just naturally assume leadership roles. There's another notion that leaders are sort of like Rosa Parks that you just mentioned, that in a moment of crisis or a great event, a person is shaped into or dragged into a leadership role. That might be Winston Churchill or someone that, like that. And then there's third notion, and I think our audience today might be the ones that are interested in that third notion, and that's leadership. I mean, leaders can be developed by themselves, by the person involved. They can learn the skills and learn to take on the traits of leadership. So if I think back on Lennon Olson back 40 years or so, when I first met you in Ewell Porter's choir at Baylor University, there were leadership traits that you possessed already. Got elected president of our class, got elected president of the good old class of 69. And I guess my question is, when did you begin to think of yourself as a person who should or could occupy a leadership role? Were you already thinking about that in terms of yourself when you were an undergraduate, goofy as we all were at that time?
I don't think so. But I think when somebody. I've loved people my whole life. Now, why have I loved people my whole life? Maybe because I needed people in my life. Maybe I needed the emotional support of people in my life, or some events that may have happened in my life where I needed affirmation. maybe we as human beings need human affirmation and maybe even the kind of theological affirmation. And maybe that's something inherent in some of us. Although I think there are a lot of people that would say, I don't need anybody. I don't need anybody. I'm completely independent. That was not me growing up. I don't think I ever thought of myself, whether I was a homeroom class president or whether I was president of the class at Baylor or whether I was, you know, president of the choir. I don't think I ever thought of myself as a leader in the sense of, you know, I sang in the choir, but I wouldn't have, I was average. I was in school, I was average. I mean, unless there were courses I just absolutely loved and made an A or B in them, the rest were, I did a lot of things in my life. And so, you know, I ran for student Congress when I was in Baylor. I never thought about, you know, why did I want to run? I mean, there are times where I've asked myself, why did you want to do that? I was 23 or 24, maybe 23, I think, when I filed for the legislature. And had 13 opponents and here in Waco, and I was elected with 13 or 14 opponents.
Why did you file in the first place?
I don't know. I look back on it. My father at the time said, son, you've taken a loss of your senses. I'm not sure why I did it, except that I thought it would be something that would be – I'd majored in political science and religion at Baylor. I thought it was an open seat. I was in an age where I was in the middle of law school. I was in an age where what I think I realized was I didn't want to practice law so much as I loved politics. And I don't think you should be in politics if you don't like people. Today, I think it's a very different world than it was then. It was relational. Maybe that's what at the core of leadership, there may be some relational kinds of things that govern, and the quality of those human relationships mattered to me. It took me a long while to realize that I couldn't have a personal relationship with everybody because I wanted to. There were votes. There was a utility in that relationship. There was a human warmth in those relationships. They were challenging. And the relationships did not have to be with people that I agreed with or even liked. I've always been intellectually curious. I've always been intrigued by differences in the world. I've always wanted to understand differences in the world. And I think one time I remember at least what I thought was a great compliment in high school was that someone wrote that I had an ability to understand. Now, I mean, I haven't gone through a bunch of psychoanalysis about all this, but it was a compliment to me that someone said that I understood. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was because I wanted to be understood as a child. Or I wanted to be understood as an adult. Because with understanding comes, I think, some richness where, as it would turn out later, I think today people don't care if they understand the differences. Often today there's so much, and we don't need to jump from my high school career to 2011 partisanship, but there was a time for at least 100 years, probably the last 100 years, where as tough as public life was, the goal was some kind of a consensus, I think. Right. We had to, you know, to govern.
That's right.
And there was a great middle. Congressman Pogue, who was our congressman here for 48 years, Mr. Pogue was more conservative than any Republican, you know. But he was what they referred to as a yellow dog Democrat. And I was amazed one time when Mr. Pogue, when I was running for the legislature, Bob Pogue was supporting George McGovern for president of the United States because he was a Democrat. And Mr. Pogue was at the absolute opposite of the continuum with McGovern. And I asked Mr. Pogue, I said, Mr. Pogue, you are so conservative. Why are you supporting George McGovern as a Democrat for president? And Mr. Pogue said to me one day, he called me Lynn Jr. He said, Lynn Jr., you need to understand that if we have a moderate conservative wing of the Democratic Party and a moderate conservative wing of the Republican Party, we'll have centrist government. And in America, where our differences are what we herald, that's about all business wants is dependability and predictability and not these great swings from left to right. And it was a whole new to me. I mean, I was young then, but as I've gotten older, we don't have moderation today.
That's true.
It's the first time in my lifetime I've not seen real moderation.
Yes,
we don't have any moderates much
that's
anymore.
True.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to KWVU Radio. I'm Will May, and this is the Central Texas Leadership Series. My guest today is Lennon Olson, former ambassador and businessman, and I'm delighted to be here with you, Lyndon. That early stage of your career led from politics to the insurance industry. Question one, why did you leave politics? Second question was, what led you into the insurance industry? And soon before we knew it, you were sort of back in public service as the executive director of the Texas Insurance Commission. Tell us how those leadership opportunities came your way.
Well, there wasn't a planned progression. It's just that I was 23, 29, I guess, and I'd run for Congress. And interestingly, I think I was in the middle there. I had somebody that was perceived to be on the left and somebody perceived to be on the right. And here I was in a centrist position, and maybe there's a personality type here that ends up in the middle. And, you know, Jim Hightower used to always say the only thing in the middle is that dead armadillos and a yellow stripe in the road. So, personality-wise, I think, I mean, my theology is often predicated on a lot of the neo-orthodoxy with the existential kind of angst, where you have to grapple with differences. You have to grapple with not absolutes. You have to grapple with a world that's, you know, not evil but is not good. Maybe we perceive the world as evil, but then you get into a theological discussion there. When I lost the race for Congress, I wasn't sure what I was going to do, and out of the clear blue, Governor Briscoe called me. And I was a young man, very young man then. And he said, Lynn, I don't want you out of public life. I'm going to appoint you chairman of the Insurance Commission and State Board of Insurance. But I can't appoint you for about 6 or 7 months because you're a sitting member of the legislature and you're not going to be eligible. So we're going to hold that appointment open. Well, I couldn't believe it. And it was just a godsend.
So forgive me, but what does a guy who majors in political science and has a law degree know about insurance?
Actually, I was in the middle of law school and all that.
Okay.
And when I had to testify before the Senate when they were confirming me, I said, well, I pay premiums. I had insurance law in law school. Colonel Windorf taught me.
See, that suggests to me that Governor Briscoe saw in you not an expert in insurance, but a person who could lead the state in that particular area in a way that would be effective and would benefit the state of Texas.
I have to share a story with you. My father would reduce all of this theory and these observations to something very simple. For about decades, it seems like everybody that was chairman of the Insurance Commission or on it ended up indicted and convicted. And I hadn't stolen anything in the legislature that I'd been indicted for or convicted for. And my father, I had, in the eight or nine years I was on the Insurance Commission, I had also been president of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, all the insurance commissioners in America. And my father, I went to London to meet with the chairman of Lloyd's of London. He and I had become friends over the years. And so I took my father with me to one of these meetings, and it was Sir Peter Green was his name. And we were in the chairman of Lloyd's of London's office one day going to have lunch. And my father, being this wonderful lawyer in Waco. You could kind of call him a country lawyer. He was sort of an Atticus Finch type. He'd been described as that by the president of the state bar one time. And we were sitting there in the halls of Lloyd's, which are probably some of the most spectacular places you've ever seen in your life. We're sitting in the chairman's office, and the chairman of Lloyd's says to my father, Mr. Olson, I know you're proud of your son. Of course, Dad was, whether he was or wasn't, we always thought he was always proud of us. And he said, well, Mr. Chairman, I want to tell you something about my boy. He said, do you know why I'm so proud of him in this job as insurance commissioner? And the chairman of Lloyd's there in London said, no, sir, I don't. He said, my boy has served on that board through four governors, two Democrats, three Republicans, and he is coming out unindicted. So it may be I didn't have a history of stealing, and that was a reason Briscoe appointed me. But he did appoint me, and I was a serious regulator. I wasn't using the position to run for further public office. I considered that an independent agency, and we were regulating one of the largest fibers of commerce in the state. And so I went into that as a very serious act of governance, and ended up serving under Democrats and Republicans. And I think that was what the statute called for. And people didn't always agree with me, but I never made a political decisions. I tried not to make political decisions. Sometimes you do.
So, for those of you who are just tuning in, we're talking with Lennon Olson about leadership as a part of the Central Texas Leadership Series here on KWBU. And now you find yourself in the board of Citicorp and Wall Street and all of those big business kinds of places. So, you know, if you reflect on now the contrast between president of the Baylor A Cappella Choir and then 40 years later a CEO of Travelers where's the lessons to be learned for a person who's listening out in the radio today about it might be surviving all those institutions, but it's pushing those institutions forward in a positive manner.
I don't know where the I'll tell you what, if there is a common denominator, if there is one, I don't think that I have changed behaviorally over the years. I think I've grown, had a lot of life experiences, some things that I've seen I probably wouldn't have otherwise wanted to see. I've been in councils and chambers and places that I never dreamed I'd be. But if there is a characteristic, and I'm not perfect in it, I don't have a need to compel other people's behavior. I have a need, if in a position of authority in leadership, to be respected. And the only thing I know to apply is what attributes would I respond to if I was being led or someone, I was in a subordinate position with someone in authority. And that would be to treat other people the way you want to be treated. And
there's a golden rule scripture there that comes to mind.
It's not complicated.
It's not complicated, is it?
No. And it wears well, and it seems to last. People seem to respond to it. Now, there are times people don't respond well to it because they have their own agenda.
Mm-hmm.
But I've always believed that made sense to me. And I've never set out to be a great leader because there are things that I'm not, which I'm not great. And I try to surround myself with people a lot brighter than I am. I don't mean that they're smarter or better, but their experiences are different than mine. Their disciplines at times were different than mine. And I think the more people that you surround yourself with that are thoughtful and considerate, that are strong, that are strong-willed, the better off you're going to be.
I agree with that fully, and there's a great commonality between your business and mine in that respect. I've always, as an academic leader, thought that if I surround myself with marvelously talented people and create an environment where they can thrive, then
grow
and stay out of their way beyond that, because they're going to push the envelope and they're going to be passionate about what they're doing. And that's if that's leadership, then that's great, because I aspire to that most every day.
You know, there was a time when we saw leadership as power, leadership as force, as compulsion. Today, I think leadership is more about helping people to develop, helping people to grow. I think today in the world, we know what hard power is in the world, military force and strength. But, in this country right now, the kind of leadership that's going to help us live in the world is soft power. And that is people's ability to communicate with other people of differences.
Yes.
It's easy to communicate with people that are just like you. The real test is to be able to talk to, communicate, understand, and respect people that are different than you are, that have different ideas, and how you make the world function in a very healthy way in the face of that.
There's a famous Mahatma Gandhi quote on leadership that is, I suppose leadership at one time meant muscles, but today it means getting along with people. That's I think that's exactly what you're saying today. Well, you're listening to KWBU. This is Will May. My guest today has been Lennon Olson, a well-known figure in Waco, as I've said, and a conversation about leadership. Lennon, we appreciate you being here today, and thank you so much for sharing your thoughts with us here at Baylor on KWBU.
Thank you, Will. It's been a joy.
You've been listening to KWBU's Central Texas Leadership Series. This and past episodes are archived online at kwbu.org.